RMN. This is Raylan Allen, and I am talking with Melinda Pillsbury Foster, who is running for president. She was drafted by Leon Smith, who is the head of the Iconoclast, and we were just talking about who Leon is and why. Well, we haven't gotten into the why he drafted Melinda to run for president. Now, she's not running for president on the Libertarian Party. She's not running on the Reform Party. She's running for president against Barack Obama on the Democratic Party. So if you've got any Democratic friends out there, or if you want to register Democrat and write her in, you certainly are welcome to do that. But Melinda, have you finished telling the Leon story? I don't think you have.
Well, I think I told most of it. You know, Leon is going to keep doing it until they kill him, basically. And he called me up, since I might as well get right into it, and said, hi. And, of course, I talk to Leon all the time, so it wasn't very strange to have him call me. But he said, I'm going to draft you to run for president. Well, this was probably the most unexpected thing anybody say to me, and I laughed. I laughed so hard I fell off the chair. And, you know, but we talked for quite a while, and then he told me why, and I said, you know what, I can see your point, and okay, I'll do it.
So what did he tell you that convinced you?
Well, he had, of course, he's my editor. He had been reading my articles, and he knew that the whole period of time that I had known him, I had been working on getting ideas to people to show them, one, how to take back their local government, and two, on the constitutional arguments of why what was going on was completely incorrect. And
right.
We had a long dialogue about that. We had been talking about some of those issues actually for months. And I told him why I thought that a transition was absolutely essential, because you can't get people to jump off a cliff. They have to see it's going to be safe. And we had talked about what I saw happening with Social Security. I had written articles about that, why it wasn't constitutional, why it was a bank that really needed to be held accountable. And he could see what I was really doing without even thinking about it was putting together a strategy to run for president. Because from the position of president, CEO of the executive branch, you can make a lot of these things happen instantaneously. What I put together, if you go to the website, you'll see what I have there, is creates a transition using the executive branch. You transition into so that you're taking all of the agencies that are now regulatory, limiting freedom, and changing their charge. And you're giving the people who work for them a choice. The choice is they can take an early retirement, they can get an enterprise renewal grant so they can go start their own business, or they can buckle down and turn the job that they have into a different kind of a mission to actually give Americans back what's been taken from them, which is the understanding of resources that will enable them more rapidly to create local governance effectively. And there are lots of examples of this. The Department of Education would be one example. People need excellence in education, but they need an education that doesn't put their children in a box. They need forms of education and curriculums that that open up the world for kids so that children can see what the world ought to be and how, and provide resources. We've got a huge amount of resource in the Internet, and we can at the same time provide kids with better educational tools at lower cost. And
well, are you going to
be a curriculum that local areas could buy if they decided to adopt it as they wanted? But it has to be on a basis that it could be a nonprofit But it can't be something that forces choices on people. People have to make the choices themselves on a local basis. It's like if you're
going to keep
a lot
the
of time in bed in a hospital, your muscles get flabby, right?
Right, right.
Well, our local governance muscles are very flabby in this country. They need to be bulked out. We need to learn how to do it again, and we can do that.
One of the things that I have seen, and you probably have seen it too, is whenever anybody gets elected to a local office, suddenly all of these New World Order people start inviting them to their conferences and things, and literally brainwashing them into this new one world government. Have you seen that?
Yeah, they have two tools. One of the tools is the surety bonds that I discussed previously. Those are, I came up with the idea for that. I called it the honesty bond or the liberty bond, liberty pledge.
Right.
And that's what Newt Gingrich stole, but he took the surety bond part out. If somebody has signed a bond or bonded to do certain things, they'll do them. The other thing is all transactions in government should be completely transparent and available on a day-to-day basis online.
Exactly.
Because when you can see what they're doing, they really can't get away with doing that. And also, governance and our, what we decide to use as forms of governance, and it is not the federal government's job to do that, to tell people how to reconstitute themselves. It should be small enough always so that the people can handle it. And different areas and groups of people, I presumably will, do different things. They will, in effect, be doing an experiment in local governance correction as they go, deciding what works and what doesn't work for them. Because nobody knows exactly what's going to work given the variables that we have today, which are so different than the last time anybody was doing it. But we certainly have some indications.
Yes. Now, your plan for saving Social Security and Medicare, how are you going to fund those plans?
Well, by going after the responsible parties, the people who actually stole the money. And the people who stole the money, I think everybody knows, it's the banks and certain multinational corporations. Basically, there are two kinds of debts. And Social Security was a trust account. It's a very special kind of a pledge. And you can't decide you're not going to pay back something that's a trust account. You have to pay it. And what they've been doing, and the reason that they've been able to get away with this, there was actually a decision on the, at the federal level that told them that they didn't have, that caused the creation of a slush account that the states were able to draw from Social Security. And that, of course, was completely incorrect. It never should have happened. The money that is put in for Social Security should have stayed there. And but at the same time, we have bailed out huge corporations, and the amount of the bailouts is not exactly the same as what is owed to Social Security, but it's close enough not only for Social Security, but to fund some other things as well. I think it's about $30 trillion that we could collect from the wrongdoing of the corporations and the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And we've put about, I think, $14 trillion into Social Security. Now, that would leave enough money to be able then to provide also commerce renewal grants to people, returning veterans, people who have been damaged in one way or another so that they could get local commerce started. And with help, tutorials, there are a lot of Americans out there who know perfectly well how to start a successful business. There isn't, and with a lack of regulatory intervention, but strict liability, and we've been talking about that quite a bit the last few hours, we can do away with a lot of the problems, because I think we all know there are a lot of ways to do things like generate energy, different ways to build cars, different ways to do business that cause no harm, but provide a service or a product that is, you know, extremely affordable. And that's what you go for. You simply set the standards differently, and you don't have the money being sucked out by the corporations or by taxes, because that's another thing that would go away. So anybody, all of the, for Social Security, anybody in Social Security would actually get a raise, because they would get more money, because you have to give them enough money so they can actually live a decent life and pay for what they need to pay for. And it ought to be on a parity with at least the federal employees. And this is more symbolic than anything else, but I think it is extremely important. The level of compensation to people serving in Congress and other positions, including the president, needs to implode down to that level. Because it is insane that we have allowed them to vote themselves into a baron, into an aristocracy. It is disgusting. It is outrageous. And it shouldn't pay any more than any other job.
And one of the things that you have said is that you are going to take all of the standards of pay, you know, for people who are elected officials and government appointees. The government appointees make so much more than people in the private sector doing the same job. There should be standardized wages, and there should be standardized retirement.
Yeah, standardized wages, standardized retirement. They need to make, a fair wage, but not the kind of wages they're making now. But that's going to be more, everybody will be more prosperous than they are now, because they won't be paying the same kinds of money that is presently flowing into the corporations. And more than 50% of everything we earn now is paid to corporations anyway.
Right.
In ways that you don't even suspect. And they talk about, well, people under a certain income level don't pay income tax, but they pay sales tax, and they pay fees, and they pay this, and they pay that, and all of that, you know, serves to suck them dry. And those are things, some of the federal level things I can do something about if I'm president, the local things, people need to take a look at that and say to themselves, what we really need is to have infrastructure that lasts, and those things we need to spend money on, and these other things over and over and over again. It has become very clear that the regulatory interventions make nobody safer. What you need is correct liability and a court system that works. That's the fix. The reason we got regulatory intervention in the first place was because the courts didn't work. You had, from very early on, you had preferential treatment by the big corporations and people with money. And that has to change.
Oh, boy, that's certainly
like it.
Sure.
Okay, I can live with that.
Yeah, right. And, it's really interesting because this 10th Amendment issue, it seems like it's a seed that has just been planted in everyone's mind all across the country. And I really do believe that that is the way that, you know, city by city, county by county, we are going to be reclaiming this country. And we've got to do it. We've got to get rid of these people, because we've got to get rid of the corporate USA. That's what it is. These people are not elected by the people of the United States. They're elected by the corporations who buy the ads, who own the televisions and all of the newspapers. Through the 10th Amendment and through, as I said, taking back county by county, school board by school board. Look, folks, all of you that are out there in the listening audience, you are the ones that have already been educated in how to do this. You have got to start running for office. You've got to start listening to Ed Corsi on Wednesdays. learning how to take your own county back, how to elect your own sheriff. I can remember, I can't remember if it was Monterey County or Santa Cruz County, that we actually had a sheriff that we put up and that we all voted for, and he was elected for two terms, for 2 years. And then the other, you know, we thought we were so smart and happy, you know, about what we had done, and then we just sort of, you know, we're so busy congratulating ourselves that we didn't get behind him again in the next election. And that was when all the New World Order people came in and backed the candidate that, you know, was working for them. And he got right back into office. And
well,
so,
when you implode the size of the government and you really take a look at it, there are ways to make that work. And I know that Ed is going to be tremendously powerful in that arena.
Yes, I do. I do too.
Local government's back.
And I look at what's going on in Montana, you know, with the Chuck Baldwin and the Robert Fanning movement in Montana to take Montana back. Have you been in touch with either of those two guys to find out how their campaigns are going?
Playing telephone tag.
Playing telephone tag. That's kind of what I thought. But they've got this right idea of taking back the state. And you know, they're not just taking back the counties. They're taking back the entire state. And, of course, a state like Montana, you know, would be easily, you know, it's only got 1 million people in it. I think you can do that pretty easily in a state like Montana. It's going to have to be a growing process in the rest of the states. But I, you know, I got away from what, you know, from what we were talking about. I don't know what it was that made me get onto the 10th Amendment. But
it's part and parcel. The 10th Amendment is the tool that you use. The 10th Amendment is what the sheriff uses in the county.
And but we were talking about equalizing all of the federal employees. And, you know, many of these federal employees have had their jobs for, you know, 40 years, 50 years. They're getting ready to, you know, retire on this huge federal pension that they're going to get, which is usually much better, than what the people on Social Security end up with. And what will be their incentive for agreeing with you and cooperating with you?
One, they will get it. Two, they'll be actually better off because they'll be paying less money than taxes and fees and whatever as well. And
okay,
they may be a federal employee, but they know lots of people who aren't. And you're also looking at a federal government where they could well lose that retirement right now.
Boy, that's
and they know
for
that.
Sure. That's for sure.
And stability matters a lot. And some of them, you know, I'm sure are going to be unhappy. Some of them may, you know, I imagine are going to decide to take commerce renewal grants and start a business. And some of them, you know, one of the things the federal government has always had a hard time doing, and most people aren't aware of that, it has a hard time at retention of really keeping people who want to serve. And I think that what's going to happen is a winnowing. I think the people who are really only there for the paycheck, they're going to leave. They're going to retire. I think a lot of those people, they're going to go, maybe, hey, I think I'm going to, you know, go into business. But I do think that there's a core of people who work there for the federal government who really want to see it be different. And they are going to be energized by the challenge of creating a transition team that can take us to where we need to be. I mean, imagine help, you know, going in and helping a town or a county start its own bank and showing them exactly how to do that and, you know, helping put their program together. And that can be done. And we need to do that. There need to be a whole variety, municipalities, states. We need to start our own banks and understand that that's the way the process was supposed to be. So that the risk and the potential accrual of profit and increase stays at the local level.
And how are we going to make sure that the people who start our own banks this time don't do the same thing that, you know, the bankers of the 20th century did to us?
They aren't going to have regulatory power, dear.
Yeah, I guess that's
what
true.
Happened. In 1913, the Fed took over regulatory power. Until then, you had banks go bust. And you're going to see banks, you know, who make bad choices and go bust. But that's a matter for the local level to determine. The federal government has no constitutional role.
Okay. Now let's talk about the grants that you're going to give people worldwide for hunting down the criminals, because those are the grants that I think most of our listeners are interested in.
Those aren't grants. Those are a percentage.
You always, oh.
One of the things, the grants are for people who they've been harmed. That will be their share of the money that we recover. But what you do is we have the U.S. military. We have the IRS. The IRS, you know, just saying the words can elicit terror in the people's hearts. But nobody doubts that they are good at going and finding the money. And I think most people know that they actually get a percentage of the money that they collect. This is another agency that's going to go be redirected, and it's going to go collect, identify, find the money, prove that it's there after we have litigated and found these parties guilty. They'd probably also be part of the discovery process. And then they get a percentage of what they find, and then the U.S. military will, if necessary, go collect it.
And suppose what they find is hidden in the bank in Russia. How is the U.S. military going to go collect it from Russia?
Well, no, I don't think Russia's going to mind allowing a collection to take place. Because let me tell you, I have a prediction. When they can see what we are doing, everybody's going to start doing the same thing. The question is going to be who's first in line. I'd really actually rather America be first in line.
Yeah, I'd rather that be the case too. So in other words, what you're saying is, what should I say? I don't know how to put it in words. What you're saying is you think a lot of the other countries are going to be cooperating because...
Oh, immediately, because look at how much sentiment there is, but they haven't had a direction. What do you think Iceland's going to do? This is exactly what they want to do. They want to go get the money back. Greece wants to get money back. They all want to get their money back. We could even subcontract services for collection.
Oh, my God, what an incredible idea. Gator, do people out there in the listening audience, I've got to pull up the chat room. I haven't been in it for a while. And see what the people in the chat room are saying about this.
Not saying anything.
Are you guys realizing what can really be done by these plans that she is laying out? First of all, wait a minute. I've got to turn off. Just a minute. I had to turn off the chat room. That was what you were hearing. Do you think people are really beginning to realize this? Come on, chat room people. I don't see any chat room.
Well, I think I'm going to write it up and show you how it would work. Because I think if I write one up and show you how it would work, then people have an easier time getting it. Because I know I'm a little bit far outside the usual paradigm here.
Well, what I worry about is that when we send the United States military in to, bust a bank in a foreign country, and of course...
We're not going to be doing it that way, Ray.
Okay, how are we going to do it?
There will be a letter notifying, and the country, imagine it's, and the country's already going to know what's going on because they will be getting that through the media. This will be news. And they will be following it on a day-to-day basis. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't its own television show to watch this happening.
Oh my God, talk about a reality television series where the individual almost like citizen bounty hunters. That's almost what you're making people into. Citizen
right.
bounty hunters.
Right.
I mean, this is going back to the old West.
Listen, what is a market reprisal, sort of? But it's actually all within the law because you're enforcing something.
How do we, what do I want to say? I've got so many different thoughts going around and around in my mind right at the moment. If we're not going to have the IRS anymore, what is going to pay for the government? Are we just going to continue?
We have an excise tax. The federal government agencies will implode till they're small enough to actually, and they have a mission. They're either going to make it as a non-profit that provides services, or they're not. I think most of them actually have a core of people perfectly competent to take on a mission that people would be happy to pay for around the world, including educational resources and what have you. Because we've got a lot of things that are sort of in the trust of the United States federal government that could then be made more widely available to everybody. And that would also be a good thing. Also, we need informational services and transparency, and that will power the economy. And I do not anticipate any problem that way whatsoever, because there's so many things that people want, and if they can get them, and they are doing, you know, good things themselves, and they will be, there'll be no problem paying for it, because we have a huge number of natural resources there that can be used as a basis for banks all over the country, and they're, you know, take a look at, you know, North Dakota, that's what they've been doing. Of course,
what do you mean?
To be careful, you have to be responsible, and you have to make sure your bank isn't raped by the banking interest.
Uh-huh. And we just had a comment that this was reminding Constance of the Communist Revolution of 1917. And what is the difference?
There isn't any similarity whatsoever.
Okay, Constance, there isn't any similarity.
About accountability here. These corporations aren't going to be just singled out because they have money. It's all going to be on the basis of you did this, you should be accountable on the terms of strict liability, and therefore we are going to have an accounting of the harm that you've done, and we're going to collect the money.
Constance,
and a lot of this is based on bailouts that never were constitutional. There should never have been any bailouts.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Constance is worried about vigilantism. And
vigilantism. Any more than military action. And you see, you're focusing on the military action. Do you think it's vigilantism?
Okay, we've got the music coming in. Explain the difference, the difference between how the military is going to handle it and vigilantism. That'll need to be explained. You are listening to Radio RMN. That stands for the Real Media Network here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. And Melinda and I will be right back. We're going to talk about vigilantism versus the military movement that she sees. We'll be back.
We hope you enjoyed this free excerpt from today's program. Register to become a sponsoring member so you can hear the complete interview for any of the radio shows in our library. Just click the sidebar link and select your membership level. It's that easy.